Hello, I'm Simon Burton and welcome to Arts Roundup, an hour spent exploring Cambridge's art scene and discovering the local talent that's thriving in every quarter. In this edition, we join the Open College of Arts Poetry Workshop Day with poet John Drew and tutor Joanna Ezekiel at Darwin College. The Twisted Willow Theatre takes advantage of the Portland Dam's new performance space to run a packed show-and-tell series showcasing new live acts. We meet the authors with Askance Publishing as they launch a collection of short stories and a cracking new murder mystery novel by author J.D. Wiseman. Filmmaker Ogie Tomich tells of his quest to find his long-lost family after being lost and abandoned as a child during the 90s conflict in Bosnia. And gallery owner Lynn Strover opens a new winter exhibition in Fenditton. Many people like the idea of doing an arts degree to tap into their creativity, but find they neither have the time or the money to do a university course. I spent a day with the Open College of Arts to find out how aspiring poets can learn through distance learning in their own time and on a shoestring, and meet up with masterclasses all over the country. Darwin College was the host venue for the OCA's Outreach Day, presented by Cambridge poet John Drew and course tutor Joanna Ezekiel. It proved a tinderbox of ideas as the group of complete strangers were thrown together and set to work. Joanna Ezekiel introduces the course.
The Open College of the Arts is a distance learning college that runs degrees in art subjects, so creative writing, textiles, fine art, music and others. So students study for a degree with us at their own pace. They take 2 years to do one module and hopefully they'll get opportunities to meet other students as well, because and so they don't feel quite as isolated.
Can you tell me a little bit about the profile of this particular group? Because we've got a very interesting bunch of people together here today, haven't we?
Yes, they're taking different modules. So some of them are studying at level one, the first year of their degree, others at level two, and others at level three. Some of them have only studied poetry, and others have studied writing short stories, others have studied both. So we've got students with a lot of experience here.
The session kicked off with a reading of poems written by students. We heard a range of original work from students, spanning a poem about a party balloon floating over London, another on the art of cycling stylishly through Cambridge's streets, and one on the animals of the Scottish glens, stags, pine martens, eagles and even polar bears, with plenty of beautiful imagery and extended metaphors. Here's Catherine Foster's poem, which looks at how building a new world often tears the heart out of the one that already exists.
They've driven stakes into my heart, each clod of earth jostling, squeezed, gasping for air like victims of Cyclone B. My worms, my veins lie still in question marks. Did you see my trees, fingers splayed, thrusting arms in supplication, leaves shuddering in the breezeless air, begging for an amnesty, for a stay of execution? Have you felt my skin, once lush and smooth? I have been scalped, pockmarked, my greensward dandruff greyed and gritted, suffocating beneath their concrete seal, sludged as they jackboot back and forth. My birds are refugees, outcasts who seek salvation elsewhere. Abandoned pearls amongst the necklace of hedges, gulp down last drops of song. Even pigeons have been startled off. Apple trees have shrugged away their buds of blossom. They will not open now. My flowers, tear-smeared with rain, abundant as a roadside shrine, are tributes at each other's funerals. Later, wheel tunnels, streams of fury gargling up above their floorboards, graffiti stucco walls with mould. Rats and mice will skitter in. Silverfish will binge on feasts of books and clothes and glue.
We were immediately tasked with improvising and dramatising two of them in groups, acting out the subject material to loosen up and get working as a group. Now, the range of activities for one of these workshops is quite wide, isn't it? I mean, we've had quite a day when we started off by listening to each other's poems and then dramatising poems, or yes, Perhaps even turning them into music. Now, how does that help you develop your creativity by bringing a poem that you've only just encountered and turning it straight into a piece of drama. What's the aim behind that?
Well, in one of the poems, the group was thinking about the sounds of the words and the images and which ones were strong enough to be repeated rather than others. So really thinking about the strength of the images here. And in the other poem, the other group were working on the narrative voice and which how many characters were in the poem and how their voices could work with the with movements that we were doing. So we were really taking the poem, lifting it off the page and looking at how the language worked in front of an audience, which is very useful.
Now thinking about language is a very sort of important part of what you do here. And we had that exercise where we did a Rupert Brooke poem reversed, mixed up. So we had all the stanzas of the poem mixed up and we had to rearrange them. What's the point of that exercise?
Well, I tutor on the level 2 module called Poetry Experience and Form, where the students look at, they study formal structures and they have to write their own version. So this is a great exercise for these students doing that module. So it just looks at how you don't have to get hung up on end rhymes, you don't have to get hung up on counting syllables. You can look at things like enjambment, you can look at punctuation, you can look at how the poem makes sense, what the images are saying to you. And the exercise that we did is kind of editing a poem, really.
And having a good group of minds working together is a very positive thing. So the spark's definitely flying all the way through, from one person to another, from one piece to another. So do you yourself write a lot of poetry, and how did you begin?
Yes, and I've had 2 pamphlets, a book and an e-book published in the last since 2003, and I was writing on and off, but actually I'm an ex-Open College of the Arts student myself. I took 3 courses with them and then I went on to do an MA in creative writing and thought, oh, I really enjoyed working for the being a student for the OCA. I'd quite like to see if I can become a tutor, which I have been since 2005. So a structured course has certainly worked for me.
The next task took it to a new level as we were given a text in Chinese calligraphy and a visiting Chinese poet was kind enough to read it for us with the correct intonation. Gu Hua is reading archaeology at Cambridge and has been a paintings lecturer on the art at Chinese World Heritage sites. Poet Xu Shi Mo was a celebrated Chinese poet who studied at Cambridge alongside Wittgenstein and Russell and also had a love for taking tea at Grantchester's orchards. His great mentor was Goldsworthy Lowes Dickinson, a great friend of E.M. Forster and a Chinese cultural expert. He wrote a poem about leaving Cambridge, which has become so well known in China that King's College Cambridge has had a special stone laid on the backs in his honour to satisfy the curiosity for visiting Chinese tourists who wanted to touch base with a poetic legend. Just listen to the beautiful intonation in his piece.
再别康桥 许志摩, 作, 轻轻地我走了, 正如我轻轻地来, 我轻轻地招手, 作别西天的云彩。 那河畔的金柳, 是夕阳中的新娘, 波光里的艳影, 在我的心头荡漾。 软泥上的青草悠悠地在水底招摇在康河的柔波里我心甘我甘心做一条水草那玉银下的
After a discussion on the features of Chinese poetry and rhyme schemes with Gu Hua, we were given the text written left to right vertically in Chinese with a translation of the characters underneath to give the stanzas meaning. Next, it was our task to choose a stanza and try to render it in English, creating English verse that matched and reflected it. John explained the problems of wrestling with Chinese grammar and logic, which has alliteration and conventions just as English does.
This is a translation of Zhu Zhimo's Zai Bei Kang Jiao, Leaving Cambridge Again, which I've translated as Farewell to Grantchester Meadows, since I'm quite sure he didn't write. It's hard to know where a poet writes a poem, but I don't think it's really, although King's College had put up a stone there, saying it's just for getting the tourists in, the Chinese tourists. And the imagery of the poem suggests that he's inspired by his walks through Grantchester Meadows with his mentor, Lois Dickinson, who had a great interest in China at King's College. This is the poem, Farewell to Grantchester Meadows, after Zhu Zhimo. Unnoticed, I am going away, just as nobody saw me come. I clasp my hands and bow my head as clouds puff up in the west. One willow, radiant in the sun, stands like a bride on the river bank. The image fades with the evening light, to be kindled again in my heart. Water weeds on the river bed flicker below me and beckon me down. I'd gladly become one strand of that weed in the lazy flow of the Cam. There's a pool in the shade of an elm churning. Bits of a shattered rainbow bobbing about on its surface settle into the colour of my dream. My dream floats onward into the night, slow as a punt being poled upstream. The green grass here grows ever greener, the stars set everything free to sing. Sadly, I have no heart to sing. My flute has become a broken reed. The crickets know, they too fall silent. Can silence compose its own song? Without a sound, I am going away, just as I came without a word. I wrap myself in the sleeves of my gown and leave it all there to the last wisp of cloud.
So one of the things we've just been doing is we've been looking at poems that have been translated from Chinese and we've been putting our own creative stamp onto them. So we've all been given the same exercise, but everybody's written their own version of a poem. So two students will have had the same poem to translate, but they will have come up with completely different versions, drawing on their own experiences, their own associations, their own memories. We're looking at word repetition, punctuations, line endings, stanza endings, different kinds of synonyms, two words that might have been were hyphenated, and just what the similarities and differences between Chinese and English poetry, which is really real food for thought, I think.
Can I get you to read out the one that you did?
This is a translation of part of Zhou Zimou's Leaving Cambridge in 1927. One full year, one boat, one bright star, speckles of starlight sing themselves free. But I'm unable to sing my own star free. Quietly, I steal away from reed pipe, flute, summer insects. How I sink into silence, as this Cambridge evening sinks into silence. This is how I leave, quietly, just as I arrived, quietly. I wave one sleeve, wave another, walk away, don't leave myself, one slice of cloud.
A lively discussion followed on Chairman Mao's poetic answers to Chinese classical poems of this sort, and issues of punctuation and how Chinese calligraphy is an art form in itself with every brushstroke. After sampling work by the poet laureate Carolan Duffy, we got into Negative Capability and the heady days of Ted Hughes and Sylvia Plath at the height of their writing in Cambridge while both madly in love, and discuss the secret lives of poets before playing literary games with a selection of Sylvia Plath's poems. John, a visionary poet himself, says the workshop provides a welcome release.
Of course, writing poetry is a lonely activity. I know there are grand slams, but in fact, most poetry is written, as Dylan Thomas has said, you know, in my craft or sullen art exercised in the still night. And it's pretty lonely for people who are learning to write poetry or being in touch, would-be poets in touch with, experienced would-be poets in an outfit like this. And it's rather nice now the Open College of the Arts is trying to give students its opportunity to come together on days like this and find that there are other lunatics who are writing poetry. And also finding out that unlike, say, an academic course, you don't necessarily get better and better and better, but you meet with others who are falling on their faces, like myself, and you find how difficult it is, and you find what fun it is.
A new sound for a new generation. This is Cambridge 105.
Trying to find an evening venue that's really buzzing, has entertaining live acts, and won't cost an arm and a leg, has been a tall order lately in Cambridge. But try investigating the new performance venues tucked away at the back of the Portland Arms pub near Mitcham's Corner. Beneath its outwardly dingy appearance, a bright new theatre space and bar has been hosting batches of crowd-tickling live acts put together and presented by the Twisted Willow Theatre. It could be just the catalyst the city needs to create a community arts hub and forum, according to artistic director Richard McNally, who created the Show and Tell comedy series. Richard, Twisted Willow, how did it come about and what does it do?
Well, the company has existed for about 7 years so far, but under different names and guises. But the most recent form has been set up to sort of nurture and encourage local talent and try and create something that's not elitist or exclusive, but sort of encouraging and inclusive of local talent.
We had a very pleasant evening with Twisted Willow at the Portland Arms, which is a wonderful new venue for this kind of stuff. I mean, can you tell me a little bit about why you chose that venue and what its benefits were?
Well, the Portland Arms, originally, I thought the venue room used to be quite dingy, to be honest, but I had a chance to get their new space, and it's really quite bright and airy, and I was really impressed with it. I like their stage and their green room upstairs, and it's definitely a space which could be much better for the arts rather than their previous rock events. You can see they're trying to branch out into sort of different areas, which is nice.
We had a fantastic lineup that evening, which was we had a play by local author Rani Drew, we had poetry by John Drew, we also had a martial artist. Can you tell me where you found her? Because she was quite something, wasn't she?
Well, I know her primarily as an actress, and she's very talented, but I wanted to try and bring in different kinds of things into this variety show. I wanted to make sure that it wasn't like anything else people had seen, and bring in different kinds of things. And when she heard that was the sort of thing I was going for, she decided to do a martial arts performance instead of her acting. And I was amazed at how good she was. I didn't even realise.
And it really was quite something to watch someone who was an absolute expert at martial arts moving across the stage all to music and in beautiful timing. Was it Tai Chi that she was doing, or was it karate, or was it Taekwondo?
It was Chinese martial arts. It was Kung Fu. She told me it was a mixture of Shaolin and Bagua forms. It was very impressive.
Well, the crowd really loved it, and she went on to do some acting as well. Is this very much basically Twisted Willow? Is it a forum for people who are early on in their careers looking for some exposure, who have an idea like that, and just getting them to actually do it and lose their inhibitions and engage with an audience?
Well, absolutely. That's what I'm trying to do, definitely. Yeah. I'm also doing sort of full-scale plays and productions and things. But with Show and Tell specifically, that's exactly the sort of thing I wanted to create, sort of encourage local artists.
Now, what's your background? Are you yourself an actor? I see that Twisted Willow does things like Shakespeare productions and other things like that. Tell me a bit about yourself.
Well, I did a drama degree at Anglia Ruskin, and my background is as an actor, but decided to move more into producing and directing. Work for Cambridge Touring Theatre as their production assistant and booking coordinator. And I'm trying to sort of move more into producing. And that's what encouraged me to set up Twisted Willow Theatre, to try and do something myself, set something up.
It's great to have a mixed bag of things in one evening, because you finished off obviously with the Impronauts, who were this wonderful group of improvisation experts who really engaged with the studio, and they created that wonderful story which was just improvised from beginning to end. Yeah. Where did you find them?
A lot of the acts at first I found who came to me, but then I decided to start looking for others, and I wanted to find a very good improv comedy group. Looked them up online and found them, and they looked very impressive. I think they do a regular thing at CB2, and they came highly recommended, and they definitely performed on the night. I think they were very good.
Okay, now what's the full range of what Twisted Willow does? Because on the one hand, you're providing these fantastic show-and-tell sort of comedy nights, which creates a really good community for local audiences, but you do lots of other things, don't you?
That's right, yes. We're hoping to do a Midsummer Night's Dream next year, and we're going to be taking that on tour to outdoor venues around East Anglia.
And what is Daffodils as well? That was something else you did.
Yes, Daffodils is a short film that I've written, and I'm looking to get actors involved in that from Cambridge. And it's a slightly dark story about a homeless girl and a man who takes a liking to her. I'm looking for actors to get involved in that. And I've done some acting for film at Anglia Ruskin. This is my first attempt to write something and put something on. I'm looking forward to working on that next year.
Now, is it difficult, someone like yourself, I mean, you've shown what you can do, a really great evening of entertainment, to get money to make these things happen. Is that difficult now?
Yes, unfortunately it is. I mean, I had some funding set up, which didn't come through. And I'm looking into government funding, and it's a real shame that it's so difficult now to get funding for local artists. There used to be these big pots of money that were easy to tap into, and now it's getting more and more difficult. And the pots of money that do exist, you have to meet very specific criteria to get access to it. You have to be doing the sort of thing which they're looking for each year. And it makes it very, very difficult, unfortunately.
Now, if someone's got a wacky idea that they feel could fit into one of your shows, should they just get in touch with you on the internet?
Absolutely.
So through the Twisted Willow Theatre.com website. That's absolutely great. Yep. Now, what's coming up in the near future in terms of the next batch of stuff that you're going to be doing?
Well, the next show and tell is on Tuesday the 29th of January. And we're looking for acts to get involved in that and people to come watch, of course. And then auditions for our production of Midsummer Night's Dream will be in the summer next year, and our film as well, Daffodils, is coming up too. So lots to be getting involved in.
Is there anything surprising in the wings at the moment? I mean, any kind of acts that people are just going to say that's something completely new coming up?
Well, it's actually potluck for me. I give people the stage and then I wait and see what happens. For the next one, I'm desperately looking for circus skills performers and burlesque acts, because those are the two things which I haven't quite got yet. So maybe some belly dancers in the burlesque area. I feel like that Cambridge is lacking a forum for all the local artists. I hear that very difficult for theatre companies to get hold of a rehearsal space to use. And I would love to see Cambridge develop a new community arts centre. If we could find a rich benefactor or enough people who wanted to support it, I think it would be great for us to have somewhere where we could all, you know, rehearse and perform. I think it's a message I'd like to get out there.
Great. Richard, you're obviously doing something really dynamic and interesting in Cambridge. It's great to see it. And I certainly will be coming along in January, as I'm sure lots of other people will.
Fantastic. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you very much indeed. If you're a writer and perhaps have a slightly different take on the way you see life and haven't yet discovered them, you should acquaint yourself with a new Cambridge-based social enterprise publishing house that's making literary waves. Askance Publishing takes advantage of print-on-demand and ebook technology to throw a rope to talented writers to help them develop and get into print affordably. The hallmark of Askance is a preference for work which demonstrates a different way of looking at the world. It's the brainchild of former diplomat and author Caroline Jayne, who has just launched a collection of 17 short stories as the culmination of a writing competition which drew in entrants from three continents, challenging them to write a story on the theme of health. Positional vertigo tales span everything from health food to disability, injury and other conditions, and has raised funds for the medical charity ACT to provide high-tech equipment, extra staff and research to support both the Rosie and Addenbrookes hospitals. Caroline introduces the book at Askance's prize giving. You must be quite proud of Positional Vertigo. Now it's come together as a project.
Yeah, I'm very proud of it. It started off as just an idea to have a competition to sort of encourage new writers. The short story form, which is kind of seeing a bit of a resurgence, and also to find a way that we could support a local charity. So we've done that, but what's happened is that we've built a whole community of writers around this project, and as you can see tonight, they're all talking to each other. It's wonderful.
Can you explain the central concept behind what makes an Askance story, as it were?
Well, the ethos of Askance is a different way of looking at the world, and that's kind of how we run the social enterprise. It's not about mainstream writers and best-selling books that will sell in the millions. It's about unearthing real creativity and literary excellence, really, but also encouraging people just to think a bit differently about how they approach subjects. So Positional Vertigo, the theme was health, and it's been interpreted in a very wide way, so it's good.
The readers of Askance stories, how have they been received, and how's the publishing company been received within the literary community in Cambridge, because it hasn't been around very long, has it?
No, it's not been around very long. Mm-hmm. People are very excited about it, and the idea, I think traditional publishers, you know, as a writer you'll write something and spend maybe a year writing it and submit it to a publisher. You'd be lucky to get a response. If you do, it'll be months later, and then you'll have to resubmit and resubmit, and we want to try and avoid that painful process and develop writers as well. So I think what's nice is we've kind of built a network of writers, not just in Cambridge but internationally. We've got writers in South Africa and Australia, and we've given them developmental feedback, not just a yes or a no, you know.
Now there are something like 17 stories in Positional Vertigo, aren't they? They cover a range of health issues. Can you tell me about what's in one or two of them, as it were?
Well, some of them are about mental health. I'm trying to remember them all now. One of them is about health food, you know, so that's different. Some of them are about physical ailments. Some of them are about disability. So they really do range. There's one story of someone who's going through an operation and is in outpatients department, so that's quite a literal interpretation. But
why did Positional Vertigo as a story end up being the title piece, as it were?
Well, it wasn't the winner of the competition. Mm. The winner was Beth Reed with The Thinker, which is an excellent story. But we just loved the title Positional Vertigo. We loved it because it was a different way of looking at the world. It just you know, chimed very well with our ethos.
Why did Beth's story win?
It was chosen by our charity, ACT, and we agreed completely. We were delighted that it had won. Her story has a beautiful twist at the end. It's beautifully written. It has a very innovative setting in Mexico, and as an artist myself, it kind of relates to a very fine piece of art by Rodin.
Mm. It's a what-if story, isn't it? Does that interest you particularly as askance, that kind of approach?
We're thinking about next year's competition already, and one of the ideas we've had is to provide a first line and to get writers to finish the story. So
great. Well, I look forward to the announcements and the prize giving. Thank you very much indeed for talking to me, Caroline Jane.
Thank you.
Overall winner was Beth Reed for her work The Thinker, based on her experiences in Mexico.
Beth, a great day for you. You've won this competition. Was that expected at all, or what did you think when you submitted your work?
No, not at all. I certainly wasn't expecting to win, just obviously delighted that people have enjoyed the story. I found the competition on a website, Writers Rain website, having written the first draft of the story, and came across the Askance publishing website, which looked really interesting and a bit off the wall. I think it really gave me a lot of focus, because obviously my main character suffers with a health issue. I don't want to give too much away, but the story's set in Mexico City. I've been travelling with my husband a lot this year, and he's been working in Mexico City, so that's been a real eye-opener for me. I've been several times, and the protagonist is a curator in a museum in Mexico City, and so it was one of those cases of what if I was this person, and then answering a series of questions on the back of that what if. So I went back to the museum a number of times, took photographs, took some videos, and did quite a bit of research, really. The story almost wrote itself in the first draft, and then it needed a lot of crafting after that, but I don't really want to give too much away.
Yeah. it's called The Thinker.
Yes.
A good read, well done for winning.
Thank you.
Runners-up were writers Sarah Yates for her work Carried Away, who won third prize, and Thomas Edward Ogden, who won second prize for Open to Get Inside. Askance reconvened at the Hopbine pub just a few days later for the launch and book signing of a new murder mystery novel by author J.D. Wiseman, who's also Askance's editor. A taste of first chapter made for some intriguing reading. David Wiseman introduces the work.
It's a wonderful taster as an opening for a novel. Where did the idea come from in the first place?
Of that opening chapter?
Yeah.
The opening chapter formed itself quite a long time ago. Several years ago now, there was a freak rainstorm in the area that I lived. It was not quite as heavy as The Subtle Thief of Youth, but it was a big event locally. And I looked at that and saw water running down streets in places that you never see water running, and was it lodged in my mind, and that's where that event started.
Obsessions of class, appearance, and the need to belong, are those all destructive influences in your work?
I think obsession, never mind what it is about, I think obsession is a destructive influence in life generally. I have written about obsession in two or three or four different ways, so I think it's an important element.
It appears in the first chapter that it's a story about what lies beneath and raking up the past, but this is all happening, as it were, with a bit of divine intervention from the weather.
Yes, it's pure chance that has raked up the past, or opened up the grave, if you like. Yes, it's the weather.
Do you, the inevitability of a murderer being caught by natural events, do you believe that ever actually happens in real life?
I can't point you at an example, but I like the idea that we are, no matter how carefully we plan things and how devious we are, we cannot account for the unexpected.
Now, who are John Westerly and Melanie Staples, exactly?
Who are they? Mm-hmm. Well, John Westerly is a farmer, and Melanie Staples is the girl who went missing 11 years ago.
What are the main strands of the plot, or what's central to the plot of the story?
I think I have several important characters. I'm not convinced I have a main character. I very much see this as, someone suggested earlier, an ensemble, and it is that. There are important lives who have important contributions to make to the story, and they all, I like to think, they all have a journey to take in the 2 weeks that is covered by the story. I think they all have different outlooks on life by the end of it.
You're saying it's a story with a kind of group dynamic rather than individual sort of protagonists. Is that an askance thing? Is that taking a different angle on mysteries, do you think?
I think it is. Yeah. I think askance, thankfully, are publishers who want to look at things differently and enjoy the idea of taking on fiction and art which is different. I hope that everybody's going to enjoy The Subtleties of Youth. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Imagine being completely abandoned as a baby in the rubble of war-torn Sarajevo in the fractured Yugoslavia of the 1990s, and growing up as an orphan amid the shelling with absolutely no idea what was going on or where your family were. That was the reality for Bosnian filmmaker Ogi Tomic, who now lives in Cambridge and has just made his latest film about his lifelong search to find his family and tell his own story. His photographic work has won acclaim in exhibitions in Sarajevo, New York, and later exhibited in London at Victoria Underground Station, raising vital funds to help other orphans in 13 countries. Just as Radovan Karadzic is again in the news on trial for war crimes after 13 years on the run, Ogi gives an account of an orphan living under fire on his wits and his filmmaking career.
Your filmmaking is very much wrapped up in your own personal story because you were one of those children, weren't you? What was your experience in Sarajevo during the conflict? Because it was a terrible time, wasn't it, for you as a child, and you lost touch with your family, isn't that right?
Yes. Mm. Yes, well, I was up on my mother giving birth to me in 1985, which is after the 84 Winter Olympics, which were quite a popular thing, I think, especially in the UK. And yeah, I was abandoned by my mother for whatever reason, where my kind of life started in one institution, then going across four different orphanages throughout the 15 years of my life. And this kind of upbringing where I had to look after myself, feed for myself, think of where the next meal is going to come, especially during the war, when the war started in Bosnia in 1992, a lot of children were left without their parents, but I was already an orphan, so it was even more difficult and challenging to try and survive the war, escaping from, you know, grenades, snipers. And I thought this was something, you know, back then I kind of, you know, didn't really think much of it, because after a couple of weeks you get used to all the noise and shelling and shooting. And this led on to me, you know, opening interest towards documentary filmmaking. And I thought using my skills as a photographer, and that just showed, you know, that people appreciate.
Is it difficult to talk about that kind of trauma, especially from the point of view of someone who was very young at the time?
Well, when I was 7 years old, now 7 year old boy, I wasn't happy growing up in orphanages, and no child is happy growing up in an orphanage. No matter how shiny, colourful, and how many toys you've got, you want to live with your family. So I was escaping from one orphanage to another on a regular basis. And on one occasion in 1992, I went through the Serbian checkpoints as a seven-year-old boy, being not confronted by the Serbs, but kind of looked down on, like, what are you doing? You know, where are your parents, kind of thing. And I have no idea how I managed to cross the checkpoints into Bosnia, because I've seen women and men being taken off the same bus I was on, and wasn't thinking much of it, because what do I know about the war as a young boy? So it shocked me to see now on the news what the destiny of those women and men was back then. Nowadays, well, but recently I've discovered where my mother was during the war, and so my uncles and cousins, and it turns out that they were in the Serbian army shelling the same country that I grew up in, but from the opposite side, from the Serbian side. They were basically destroying the country they were born in and they held a passport of. And that was an absolutely shocking thing and discovery for me, because, you know, the people who are your enemies turn out to be your family. And it was a very, very...
This process of trying to find your family has been a major thing for you in your life. It's been a central theme of your film making. So it's only recently that you've actually managed to turn up leads to trace these complete strangers by now. Yeah.
Yes. It was only... I've made several attempts in the past to do something like this, but then I kind of went, well, not really, I'd rather focus on something else. And yes, I've gone on to trying to make a film, which will be released in the coming months. And it tells the story of my, you know, finding family and discovering of, you know, what they were doing back then. And I do know where they are now, but there isn't really much of a link, really, between us, which is okay, because, you know, I can't expect, you know, to have a mother after 27 years, or for her to think that she's my mother, because it's not something that happens overnight, I'm afraid. And what she has done, you know, back 27 years ago, doesn't mean that I hate her for it. In fact, I forgive her for it, but I can't accept her to be my mother. Not because I have something against her, but it's just because it's, you know, it's life. And I'm afraid, you know, I've had a very difficult upbringing, but I think if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be, you know, doing, you know, things that I do today, which is make films. I wouldn't be enjoying what I do today, and it was just...
You've not only survived that whole experience, but you've now, you're married, you live in Cambridge, you've got a life and you're making films. Can you tell me about what's in your films? Can we talk about the art of what you do and where people can actually have a look at them? Because you have a website, don't you, for
yes.
that?
Well, most of my films are obviously based around people's experiences in life, because I like to learn about different cultures, different backgrounds, and, you know, give people a space and medium where they could express and you know, talk about their life experiences. So these are the kind of... Most of the films are quite emotional, and they have a personal kind of touch to it, and different approach, obviously, to each film. And the aim of each film that I tend to do, especially documentary, is that... Yes, it is a film, but I wanted to make a difference. For example, one of the films on the asylum seekers in the UK has actually won him an appeal in order for him to stay in the UK and you know, make a life for himself here, because he used to be working for a UN before the war in his country, and obviously it was too dangerous for him to go back. But as we know, immigration is quite tough here. So I thought, you know, we should make a film, you know, about this guy and try and help him express himself differently rather than fight the case. And I'm pleased to say, you know, that he managed to get what he deserves, I think, which is freedom and freedom to move and be the man he was before. And this is what UK has recognised after seeing the film and have given him a life here.
How many films have you made so far?
Well, I've probably made in the last few years at least 40 to 50 films.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, my films, especially the latest film that I'm doing, it's basically... to throw them a lifeline and say, you know, you can do it. Don't believe in what the staff at the institutional social services are telling you, you can be what you want to be in life. Just do it, go out and do it, make mistakes, you know, get whatever help you can, don't take things for granted, and work hard, and you will get to where you want to get. And, you know.
Okay, Augie, where can people see these films? Where would they be able to log on and have a look at them?
Yeah, well, most of my films are on my website, which is augietomic.com. If you just type in Google, OGGITomic.com, you will come across a wide selection of archive movies as well as the latest projects.
Augie, thank you very much for sharing such an interesting story with us. And obviously, if people want to see the films, they should go to your website and have a look at them. It comes highly recommended. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You found us.
This is Cambridge 105. As the festive season kicks in, buying something a bit special for the home by way of a painting or a sculpture might just add to a sense of domestic bliss. I dropped in to visit a woman whose keen eye for contemporary art is well known locally and who's currently having a Christmas exhibition. Lynn Strover's bright and airy gallery is in Fendyton High Street and it's well worth a visit, as I discovered. You have contemporary art mainly. Can you tell me a little bit about what you contain in your gallery here?
This is my winter exhibition and I've got two printmakers, Rosemary Vans and Liz Somerville, working in different media. One's doing relief lino cuts and the other one's silkscreen, and they're rather lovely. The paintings are from Emma Dunbar, whose range of colour is quite phenomenal, down to Clive Blackmore, who's been painting the same objects in his studio in Cornwall for 20, 30 years. It's more about light and space.
Where did you get that wonderful sculpture? There's a lovely sculpture in here, which is an extremely large head.
Yes,
which looks as though it is a kind of reworking of something that you might have found on Easter Island or something. Where did that come from?
Right. Well, that didn't come from that far away, actually. No, that's a Chris Marvel, who lives in Fulbourne and St Ives. And I go down to St Ives quite a lot, a little place down there, so we meet at both ends. And that is called Fishman, and I think he's splendid thing.
When you're selling paintings to people, it's very important that they actually really do want the piece, isn't it? Because then they go away happy.
That's
at the end of it, isn't it?
That's very important. Yeah. That's the most important thing, that they don't really want to live without it.
Yeah. Price range starts at what here?
Well, we've got some fabulous little prints, silk screens of Rosemary Vans for £225.
Yeah.
Small edition prints.
Do you spend time with your artists in their studios? Do you go and see them in their creative...
I'm working with professional artists. I am allowed in. Some artists more private than others. I do get to know artists, and it's been a helpful way for me to assimilate my knowledge, because you do understand their work much better. What things look like is very important to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really like people.
Mm-hmm.
I like talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sort of combination of those things. So where they live, is it a modern flat? Is it a Victorian terrace? The light, the space, the shape on the walls? Is it minimalist? Is it cluttered? Lots of things. I mean, they might not want my help. They might go straight to a painting. Quite often they go to a painting and they're wearing the colours that are in that painting. They're drawn to colour. People are very often drawn to colour. What I quite often do is take work to their house if they're uncertain, or take perhaps one or two paintings and we can judge, because I do think context is important. Would you design a room around a painting? Well, I personally would, but usually I work the other way around. People have designed a room and they want the painting to enhance the room. These are Henrietta Dubry paintings, and she was selected by the BBC for the absolutely fabulous programmes last year, the Christmas show and the Olympic show, and she's been very successful.
Does that mean she's been hobnobbing with people like Joanna Lumley?
It didn't, actually. No, it didn't. But it was, what it proves is that media coverage actually enhanced her profile, and she's had a very successful year in a year of when, you know, lots of in Cork, she lives in Cornwall, quite a few artists have been struggling down there, and Henrietta's had a stratospheric year.
I think if anyone's got a few bob to spend, it's worth an excursion to come here and have a look at what you've got.
Well, to be honest, can I just say, you don't need to have a few bob to spend. Yeah. Come and have a look anyway. Because I think it's, I know it's not a public gallery, but I do think when and if they do have the need for a painting, they'll remember and come back.
Yeah.
I do work on long-term relationships with both my clients and artists.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Arts Roundup. I'm Simon Burton, and I hope you enjoyed the hour.